Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. My guest today, Jason Raposa. Jason, it's great to have you on. I appreciate you being here. Can you tell us first where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Good Feels?
Hey, how's it going, Matt? So thank you so much for having me. I am Jason Raposa. I have a company called Good Feels. We're based out of Medway, Massachusetts, kind of on like the 495 belt of Massachusetts.
Amazing. That's awesome, man. Can you tell me a little bit more about your background and what kind of led you up to wanting to create a brand in this space? Obviously, huge and up and coming space with different regulations changing all the time. What did you kind of notice out there on the market that you were trying to do a little bit differently with this brand?
So we've been in it for a minute. Like, we're actually, I developed the original formulations back in 2019. So that's 5 years ago now. It's kind of insane how things have passed. I didn't have this many gray hairs, I'll tell you that much. So my background is in technology. I've been programming since the 90s, like 96, maybe 95, 96, somewhere around there. I probably was started programming just out of high school and or around, you know, senior year of kind of high school. I started actually before then, to be honest, but like seriously, like looking at programming and technology back then, around like 96. And I was, you know, I've done all types of technology basically since. And so what happened to me, though, was I was in the process of selling my last company. And in the process, I ended up locking up my jaw. I was under tons of stress. We're selling it to a publicly traded company. There's just extra burdens and levels of scrutiny on a public deal. So it drove me to the point where my mouth wouldn't even open, just locked shut, because I was grinding every night. And for me, it was really more about the fact that I was doing whatever it took to open my jaw. Literally, I'm not a traditional cannabis user in any sense. I literally am father of three. I'm athletic. I work out all the time. I never considered myself like a you know, all the connotation like stoners and all this other stuff, like stay in shape, take care of his body. And the stress was just driving me, though. It's insane. And so eventually I stumbled upon like CBD oil. Back then it was like hot dog water is what we called it. It was just like, right, you don't know what's in it. It was actually CBD in here or not. And there was like a COA, if you're familiar with that terminology, a certificate of analysis to determine what's actually in there. There's no COAs with these things. There's just like little tincture bottles floating around at flea markets or, you know, yard sales, and be like, oh, I guess I'll try that CBD oil, you know, and didn't really work. And then I tried one that did work, though. And I was like, oh, that's what it is. And it ended up saving my jaw. And the reason why was because, not because of the inflammation or anything like that, that CBD was helping. It was because of my stress, right? And so since I was able to reduce my stress, I wasn't reoccurringly getting into trouble with my jaw every time. And so that was around 2019. And eventually I started home grows. I started doing, like, I'm just a guy who likes to hash rosin pressing and like all kinds of crazy stuff, washing my own, you know. So anyway, so it was just like, there's so many different ways you can kind of like slice this. And I decided to create new technology or technology that kind of existed in some format, but adapting that and making oil go into water. And once you can take that cannabis oil and put it into water, a bunch of other benefits come from it. And so back in towards the end of 2019, as I stumbled upon this different technology, and then the sale of my company was just ending, and I was actually exiting that after the acquisition, I was exiting that company. I said, well, maybe this is my next big thing, because if it can help me, it can help a lot of people. And I was kind of a convert basically for the plant at that point. So fast forward, you know, many, many years later, we have very successful products in the cannabis market, as well as the hemp market. And so for us, it's really just slowly the idea of these types of products can be very helpful for everyday consumers. The actual company's first name was called Everyday Cannabis, not Good Feels. Everyday, because I did feel like people can consume cannabis every day. Doesn't mean they're going to get high, you know, to the gills every day. It just means that you can use it every day and there's no necessary downsides to it necessarily. Like, obviously you can, there's definitely downsides if you overdo things, but you know, if you consume a bunch of CBD or even just, you know, a little bit of THC here and there, it's not going to kill you. There's no, the whole reefer madness is like way overblown and yada, yada, yada. But we create really great products now. We have products, like I said, in the cannabis market and in the hemp market. But the reason why I'm ultimately got in there is because I had my own medical issue.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I always love the stories of, you consider the CPG, I suppose, but you know, it's kind of its own category naturally. But yeah, I always love the backstories. I mean, it's almost always like brought out of a personal need or a need of a partner or a son or a father or a mother or a friend. I always love the backstories. I love that you have the why behind the company. Obviously, it's awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. And so yeah, I just myself very recently kind of learned the differences between, one, by how it's regulatorily treated, which is, you know, between hemp and you know, hemp and cannabis derived THC. What is your kind of perspective on that? Because I feel like there's a lot of misinformation out there. If anybody listening probably doesn't doesn't have a super clear picture what those two things are between like the hemp derived like D8, D9s versus what like, you know, real cannabis derived, shouldn't say real, I mean, they're both real, but like a cannabis derived THC product and how they're different.
Yeah. You have opened a can of worms because there's a ton of misinformation and there's no clear guidance in many ways. So as a person who understands the plant a little bit, I'm not this scientist who has decades and decades with this material, right? This is just fairly new to me, but based on everything that I understand of the plant, and I can get learned pretty quickly with this stuff. As I started to develop kind of like inside and out of cannabis, hemp, marijuana, weed, pot, whatever, it's all the same plant, right? So it's cannabis sativa, right? Cannabis sativa is the plant. Indica was a misnomer. They've already clarified that many times, but people still say, oh, I want sativa, I want indica. It doesn't mean anything anymore. Everything is kind of hybrid. Like there's no really true strains of indica and there's no true strains of, I mean, maybe there's a couple out there, but for the most part, it's been crossed and blended and, you know, hybridized. So from my perspective, they're all hybrid right now, but I will say that the cannabis plant is technically, hemp is technically the cannabis plant, right? It's a cannabis sativa. However, it's been bred to have really low dose of THC, the intoxicating portion. I don't really love the word intoxicating, but that's a different thing, but it technically has that intoxicating behavior of THC and some of the other minor cannabinoids that also have a little psychoactive or intoxicating behavior as well. But since it's reduced significantly in that, people kind of said, oh, hemp. And people are like, oh, I can make, you know, when you think of hemp, you're like, oh, I can make like a hemp t-shirt, or I can do hemp concrete and hempcrete and like build buildings with it. And it's that industrial product. Well, distinction really came from, I believe it's a paper that was done in like the 1970s. I don't remember the exact 100% history, but there was some paper that says, you know, hemp plants are under 0.3% THC. That's why they're called hemp plants. And everybody just adopted that from then on out. But it's the identical same plant. It's just the way the plant expresses itself. And the plant is quite miraculous in a sense that it can express itself in many ways, right? You can have all different types of plants that produce THCV, the varin version of THC, as well as CBG plants. Like there's just so many out there, but predominantly you're talking about THC and CBD levels on any of these plants, and you can breed them in really high THC, really high CBD, or mixes of, you know, variations of each one. It's really hard to eliminate THC 100%. There are some people working on it using triploids and all kinds of crazy genetics that I don't fully understand. But for the most part, you know, you can't really, there's always going to be a little bit of THC in the plant itself. You then just have to remove it all in order to get the strictly the rest of the stuff that's in there. So regulatory wise, so let me pause there. Any questions on that stuff? Because the regulatory side is actually really what's hot right now.
Yeah. So basically, as I understand it, you know, cannabis, obviously, as it's so called, is just higher than 0.3% in THC content in the flower of the plant, whereas hemp is under 0.3%, basically. These hemp derived THC products that you find that consequentially on the regulatory side, which we can get into as well, are able to be sold across state lines because it's not regulated like THC derived from cannabis is. It's basically just like you just need a higher volume to extract from a plant that just has like such low content in and of themselves, but you can still extract it that way. You just need a lot of it, basically, is the way I understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so just you really tapping into that one before we get to the regulatory side, you are correct. And again, that 0.3 is an arbitrary percentage, right? That just literally came from some random paper somewhere. So whatever it is, but it is 0.3, okay? So for now, the federal government back in 2018 through the Farm Act defined it as anything less than 0.3 is considered hemp, and you can have a special license and it's regulated and it's fine, but it's really for feedstock and, you know, really true agricultural products where you're making hemp fiber and stuff like that out of these large things. Right. So then on the licensed cannabis side, that's a state by state thing because hemp is federally legal. You can go across state lines, whereas the cannabis is really regulated on a state by state basis. And almost zero states have great overlap with their rules. Connecticut, for instance, doesn't allow any packaging unless it's black and white. You literally have like these.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Just create. And then Massachusetts doesn't have multi-serving beverages. I'm a beverage company. So that's really impactful for me. So I can't make a drink that has like 10 servings in it, or I can't create like a really beautiful gin and have like 20 servings of 5 milligrams in this beautiful gin. Because we've developed stuff like this. We just can't launch it. But other states have multi-serving beverages, right? So it's like every state does it a little bit different, but you are right. Now let's get to the, how do you actually get Delta 9 THC? Because Delta 9 is this weird kind of nomenclature thing. Delta 9 THC, or Delta 9 as it's known on the hemp side, is the identical compound in cannabis called THC. That's also Delta 9 THC. Okay. What happened is they had to distinguish themselves a little bit different than just cannabis THC. So they called it Delta 9. Delta 9, there's also Delta 8, Delta 10, right? There's a couple others even in there. Like you can kind of mix this and mash this up a ton of different ways. Won't get into the deep science of it, but basically you're right. You have a very large field of plants They're all technically supposed to be under 0.3% THC on a dry weight basis. Then you mix it all together and you say like, all right, let's take all that CBD. Let's isolate that. We'll save that. Let's isolate all the THC. We'll save that out there. It's usually done through what's called chromatography, which is just taking like a little, it's almost like distillation. If you're familiar with how whiskey is made, like the ethanol, it's the parts in between that you really care about. So you throw out the head, you throw out the tails. That's literally what's happening in chromatography. It's just like, I only want this little segment that represents the THC. So you take that out. So you basically have a crude oil, like a mother liquor, out of all these CBD plants. You extract the Delta 9 THC rata out of there. And now you have a purified version of Delta 9 THC, which has a proper chain of custody as well as a certificate of analysis, meaning that you can point to the field, which is what we use as raw material inputs for our hemp line. You can point to the plants in the field and be like, it came from this farm in California, right? And you can say like, that's where that plant came from. And even though we processed it a little bit, we were able to extract enough Delta 9 THC to put it into our products. Again, 0.3% or less. So that's how that's kind of all worked out. However, there is one little hiccup, right? I'm only telling you this utopia, like this panacea of like wonderful nature, how it all comes apart. But there are converted versions as well, which is how you get into the Delta 8s and the Delta 10s.
Right.
Basically, you can destroy the entire edible industry as far as like THC cannabis license stuff by converting it all from CBD, right? Because you can purify it. If you're a responsible lab person, a chemist, you're able to clean up your conversion from CBD to Delta 8 to Delta 9, you can clean that up into these very strict parameters in order to clean up their chromatography. So you're only selecting this band, right? And you clean out all the solvents, you clean out all the chemical things that you put into it, and you've got this really beautiful pure D9. The problem is, it did technically come from a CBD plant. It got converted using other chemicals to be able to get there. So long story short, and I used to know a little bit more about the chemistry behind all this stuff, but because I've actually converted some myself just for fun. I have a short path distillation set up in my house. So I just like, hey, throw some CBD in here, throw some citric acid. That's all it takes. Just throw some citric acid and some CBD and you can get Delta 8 out of it. It's that simple. You just reflux it over like 4, 5, 6 hours. And all of a sudden it's just like, boom, you've got Delta 8 THC now. And it's filled with garbage too. You have to throw out. But like, so anyways, I didn't take it that far. But the point being, it's super easy to make this stuff and you can cut all your costs super, super low because you don't need the actual cannabis plant to make all these edibles now. Right. And that's kind of what's happening. And this is something I saw even back in 2020 when I first started the licensed cannabis side.
Yeah. And then I know, like, you know, in New York, we were going to kind of surprisingly a little bit later as an adopter to, you know, recreationally legal THC in New York State, I mean, after Maryland, after Maine, after a lot of other states. And before then, and even up to today, pretty much all you can find, unless you go to a licensed dispensary with, there's just lines out the door that there's not enough of them yet. They're only giving out so many licenses. So all you can really find on like a one-off basis, or like, you know, you just want something quick, you want to go to the gas station, all you find is D8 and D9. And I know you were going somewhere with, you're saying there's one hiccup with it, which is using a CBD plant. So is that a problem with, for like COA certification, using the CBD plant and converting? What's the kind of issue there?
Yeah, well, the issue there is that when you do the chemical conversion, there's leftover things like solvents, right? Like some nasty solvents, like a hexane and stuff like that, that like kind of creep into it because you're using it to clean it all out, do washes and like clean it out. But if you're a properly trained chemist, like this is common things you're supposed to do in labs anyways, because I always go back to the example of aspirin. You know what the origination of aspirin is?
No.
Birch bark.
Really?
Right? It comes from birch. It's salicylic acid, right? It comes from birch.
Fascinating. Yeah.
So, but you don't see pharma companies harvesting thousands of acres of birch trees to be able to produce aspirin. No, they figured out the chemical process, right? So they convert it from something else. Actually, I don't know what the root it comes from, but they create, it's all aspirin is all lab created right now. It's not like they're harvesting birch trees and like stripping them down. There's farmers. And so it's the same process that pharma uses. It's just that the regulatory side hasn't been developed fast enough because government always lags behind innovation in private markets. Therefore, there are some bad actors who are putting out not clean products, right? And so as a hemp operator and also as a licensed cannabis operator in the Massachusetts market, we need to kick a lot of those bad actors out. Actually, all of the bad actors, not a lot of them, just all the bad actors have got to go because it's ruining it for everybody at this point. And that's where it gets to the regulatory side, because a lot of my peers in the Massachusetts licensed market who own dispensaries are pissed off. They're like, there's gummies, there's these gas station gummies, and everybody points to the gas station gummies all the time. And who knows what's in them? It's all blah, 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 blah. But in reality, there's a lot more nuance to it than that. And I mean, we can go down that path, but I figured I'd stop here again for a little bit of question.
Oh, yeah. So I guess I'm just curious. So going back to your business, as you continue to learn these things and grapple with like regulatory changes that happen, do you find that you're like looking for more like acceleration and growth on the hemp derived side because of those like unique advantages that it poses when you do it the right way? How do you kind of deal with that in your own mind? Like just think about the brand and moving forward, you know, into the future as you continue to experience growth.
I believe in full on federal illegality. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care which pathway we get there, but we'll be there. And that's the thing is that, like, I think a lot of operators are a little short-sighted that they didn't see this coming up. I actually started in the hemp world first before I spent millions of dollars building out this facility for cannabis. If I had known it was going this way, maybe I wouldn't have entered this market. However, we also make a lot of high dose products, right? And the high dose products really, you're not going to find those in a gas station. You're not going to, I mean, ours anyways, I don't know, maybe some people right. will do these things, but we have a product right now that has 500 milligrams of THC in 1 ounce bottle. That is way too much THC in general. For me, especially, I can't handle it myself, but like we make it because people who are going into the dispensaries, this is what they're looking for. These are people who consume huge amounts of THC. So from my perspective, I can be happy in both places. Yes, there's a lot of advantages to be in the hemp world, and there's a lot of advantages to also be in the cannabis side. And as an operator who's agile and flexible and has kind of saw this happening years ago, how this was all going to unfold. I didn't know how fast it was going to unfold, but I knew it was going to unfold like this because I've told you that statement before, like hemp-derived Delta-9 THC could easily take over the entire edibles market. Like I could take in my licensed facility a bunch of CBD, convert it into Delta-9 THC, and never have to pay wholesale Delta-9 to be supplied into my products, right? I'm not going to go there. We have really good relationships in the market, but like it's easily just to like, if I just want straight up Delta-9, the chemical compound, Delta-9 THC, there's other ways to get it than from the plant. That's basically all I'm saying. So we're happy either way. With that said, a lot of the people in the licensed market are upset at the hemp companies. And I'm trying to be that bridge, that voice of reason to say like, hey, if we can form a coalition, if we can all do this together, then we can kick out all the bad actors in hemp, right? But you got to allow us to be regulated and taxed in a way that allows us to have a clear pathway that we're not always looking over our shoulder to see if like there's some kind of like raid happening or the alcohol companies are going to come after us and stuff like that. Like so many foreign enemies on the hemp side that we don't even know about sometimes. But there's a ton of supporters also. So I'm very hopeful with hemp, but what pays the bills today? Our cannabis company, without a doubt.
Yeah, there's definitely, I feel like just a vibe of like cannabis derived THC supremacy with people who operate in those regulated markets for sure. That's what I find. That's why I wanted to ask you about that. There's like, you're clearly very knowledgeable about it because I think that people do need some clarity on those things. And even though there may be some truth to like Delta 8, like why is it Delta 8 versus Delta 9 versus Delta 10? Like now I know, I'm happy I know because like there's really hard to find any clarity on that. I mean, through any channels out there. So it's really fascinating. And I suppose when you think about working in a regulated market like Massachusetts, I mean, how do you go about selling this stuff? I mean, is there any opportunity to sell direct to people, or are you pretty much forced to operate through like licensed dispensaries? And if that's the case, do you have your own dispensary or do you work with third-party dispensaries?
No, I never wanted to own a dispensary because I didn't want to own the package store. That I always equated like the cultivators. I never wanted to be a cultivator. A, because I'm actually not good at it because I've tried many times and I'm actually not a good grower. B, and I like to know how everything works and runs, and I want to be good at something so I can hire good people and I know what good quality is, and everything we do here is high quality. But I didn't want to be a cultivator either because I was just like, you know, I don't want to be the farmer either, right? I wanted to be the brand. Because brand, CPG, brand is everything, right? So for me, it was always from the very beginning that I wanted to create something tangible that I can put on a shelf and I could say, I built that, right? And my original goal was, before I was in Massachusetts, I was in Brooklyn for like, you know, a dozen years or so. And when I was in Brooklyn, I always think back to those days to say, you know, when I create my next company, I want to create a physical product because I'm a technology guy and everything was zeros and ones. So I was like, let me find something tangible I can hold in my hands and like really actually probably. I should probably show you what it actually looks like. You probably haven't seen this before. This is our hemp version, right?
Very cool. Here it is. Are all the drinks hemp versions or?
The seltzers are, yeah. The canned seltzers are all hemp, yeah. And the other products, like I said, the 500 milligram product, it comes in like this little tincture bottle. But the point being that, I actually don't know what my point was going to be. Where were we?
You were saying you came from Brooklyn. You're always doing you know, software development and things. It was all zeros and ones. You wanted something tangible, yeah.
Exactly. So what I was thinking was like, I was going to do, I don't know, woodworking or something like that. But then I stumbled upon cannabis. And I imagined in my head thinking about those old Brooklyn bars to be like, it would be so cool to have this in the bar, to be able to say, I don't want to drink alcohol tonight. I'd rather have just a, you know, THC seltzer. Perfect. And I was like, I can't wait for that to happen. Well, it's starting to happen. And I'm just like, people on the hemp side are asking us for kegs. It's insane. They're like, hey, can we get a couple kegs instead of the cans? Because we want to have it on draft. I'm like, yeah, we'll figure it out. Well, you know, we haven't sold a keg yet, but like, I can't wait to sell my first keg. Because then it's like on the bar tops, you know? It's always been a dream of mine to have that ultimately as a goal, but it's moving so fast. I was expecting this like 5-10 years from now, not necessarily like overnight, seemingly.
Right. Yeah. So that's really interesting. So obviously food service is going to be kind of a new vertical for you. It already is. And then I guess when you think about, you know, relationships with dispensaries, you know, obviously having so many CPG conversations on the podcast, you know, one big topic conversation working with like retailers for like, you know, traditional CPG, like, you know, food and drink, you know, one of the biggest pain points is like, you know, shelf placement, obviously. Now that's a whole different world when you're thinking about dispensaries. So like, how do you kind of approach those conversations when you get into maybe a new dispensary for the first time? Obviously, you know what maybe has worked in a different one, but how is that kind of maybe a little similar or different than working with maybe like a grocer or like a more traditional retail channel that way?
Yeah, they're almost, I mean, I would love to say that they're very similar, but they're just not. Everything's based on relationships in Massachusetts, especially. So if you have a good relationship with your dispensary, they'll let you come in there. They'll let you set up a nice little display and stuff like that. And sometimes they're in jewelry cases. Sometimes they're just shelf placements. And we have like variations depending on what it is, but it's all in-store merchandising, which again, that term comes from retail. So it is similar in many ways, but sometimes actually it is becoming more similar. You know why? Because now they're starting to suggest like slotting fees. You know what I mean? Like, hey, if you want the end cap, you've got to pay this amount just to be there, right? So there is some of that that's starting to bubble up in Massachusetts now. And I just laugh at it because, you know, if you've got a strong brand, people are still going to be coming to the stores to find your particular products.
Right.
But the number one advocate, this is what differs in traditional retail for the most part. The number one advocate of the way you get sales inside of dispensaries is the bud tenders, right? Because even if you don't have shelf placement, if the bud tenders love your product and a person asks them, well, what do you like? They're going to say, oh, I love Good Vibes. I take this every single day and I put it into my water. I put it into my coffee in the morning or whatever. So the bud tenders are really our core audience when it comes to like getting as many samples to them, providing them with swag or whatever, merchandising, just to make sure that they love our product. So they will then convince the customers to also buy our products.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So like, in a sense, like your ideal customer is really like the bud tenders at the dispensary. It's not even necessarily the end users. Like, I mean, obviously, well, you care about that customer experience for sure, obviously. But what's going to really, as your biggest advocate, you know, you want to make sure the bud tenders like it first and foremost, right? That's fascinating. That's a really interesting dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we love our customers, obviously. But for us, it's like, and this is why low dose, like the hemp drinks don't really work in dispensaries, is because, you know, how many people laugh at us about 5 milligrams in dispensaries? 5 milligrams. I need 25, 50 milligrams to even feel anything. 5 milligrams. I can't hit, blah, blah, blah. So all the people who we're like, there's an old term called kind of curious back in the day, where they're like, hey, all these people who are really curious about trying cannabis for the first time, they're going to walk into a dispensary and they're going to find a nice low dose product to buy. The problem with that is a lot of these people, they're so hesitant going to the dispensaries because they don't want to have to show their ID a bunch of times and there's cameras everywhere. They're just like a little bit scared. But this is a great way to introduce somebody to cannabis. So for us, we're very much in favor of the liquor stores because you're just like, hey, if you're going and buying a 6-pack of, you know, craft beer, pick up a 6-pack of this too. And then when you try it and you like it and you're like, wait a second, I can dish the alcohol or I can reduce the alcohol, use these instead. And eventually when I want to go to a higher dose, because it's like, it feels good, but I want a little bit more, you go into the dispensaries and now you're comfortable trying cannabis. And so we find it's a great feeder into the licensed dispensary market.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. And man, I don't know who these people are. Like the 5 milligrams is like that's like my sweet spot, you know? And I'm kind of you. I'm not like a super like, you know, frequent user, but I do. And when I do, I mean, that's like pretty much what I look for. If it's not going to be like, you know, straight flower, if it's something like a drink or an edible, I mean, that's like my cap. It's like that or like maybe even slightly less, right? So I think that's true. And I was actually going to ask about that, which is like when you talk to people at either the bud tenders or whoever, like owners, proprietors of these dispensaries, do they still find that a lot of people that are coming in are like still kind of first time, like kind of curious users? I mean, I can imagine that there's still a lot of, like, that's a big part of people that are going to dispensary. Do you kind of find that from them in your conversations? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's still people coming in that have never been into a cannabis dispensary, but we were expecting a flood of people as all the news starts happening and, you know, the TV channels pick you up, a new dispensary is opened up here. Delivery is now a thing. And, you know, all these things in that were the PR that was the PR machine that was driving a lot of this thing. We were expecting a lot more because again, I started in low dose products before we made the 500 milligram Good Vibes product, everything we had, our first seltzer was 3 milligrams, right? Because we have this altruistic belief that's a great entry-level point. So we were companions. We're inseparable with the dispensaries because we were like, get them this first. And if they like it, they'll go up in scale and they'll try other things as they become more comfortable. But they got to start somewhere. And it turns out, yes, there are still people going in that haven't been before. But like, I can't quote numbers. I'd be misquoting things. So I don't want to go there. But, you know, obviously the people who are trying it inside of like liquor stores is way higher because now it's going to a place where they're just, there's a ton of new people who have never tried cannabis before, but are going in there for an intoxicant. So they're like, hey, let me just switch this intoxicant to this intoxicant and I don't get a hangover. Great. Let's do it that way.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. And that makes sense. And especially as you mentioned, like going to a dispensary can be a little bit overwhelming for the first time. You know, maybe there might be a line. You're waiting in line. It seems like everybody knows what's going on and maybe you don't. And there's cameras and the whole nine, right? I feel like you put it in a place where somebody's already comfortable. They kind of, there's something they do on a regular basis, going to a liquor store, wherever they're buying their beer or something. And just having that as like another option where like, you know, you see already seeing things like, you know, now you go to the beer store, there's beer, there's seltzer, there's all these different like types of, you know, ready to drink cans of things. So I feel like it fits in right there. And as far as like people going somewhere to like, you know, somebody goes to the beer store, maybe they buy it, they want to just go to want to buy like a new type of beer they haven't tried before. People do that, I think, at these, especially at those like big beer stores. So that's fascinating. You know, it's such a common experience, obviously. And CPG, again, this is like some of those things I find is like commonalities that I love is like whether you're doing CPG and it's cannabis or whether you're selling, you know, chips and like iced tea, you know, what you think is going to be the product market fit, which like on its face, like if you were to ask me like if that's going to work, it's like a perfect plan. Logically, it makes perfect sense the way that you were trying to do it in the dispensaries. But lo and behold, a genius idea just doesn't work out and you have to make the pivots like you did. So I think it's really important to not be like super married or stubborn about like what you know is a good idea and what still was a very good idea. For whatever reason, it doesn't work. The pivots are the most important thing, I think, along the way for an entrepreneur. So I appreciate you sharing your experience with that.
One alternative to that, though, it could have been better if they allowed us to advertise, right?
Yeah.
Like we don't even, so like you're going into a dispensary and you see it on your commute home. You're like, oh, let's just stop in there one day and see what's going on. And if you don't know enough about cannabis, when you walk in there, it's like can be very much overwhelming. So if we were to prepare people by saying like, hey, we've got these low dose drinks and we could advertise on Meta, for instance, or whatever, to be able to bring in new consumers into these stores, because now we can advertise, you know, drinks or whatever it might be, low dose side, we could have drove probably more people in there, but due to the regulations, we can't advertise. So nobody knew who we, unless you walked into a dispensary, nobody had a clue who you were or what brand you was, what it was.
Yeah, no, that's another fascinating thing. And how do you find, like, I guess you would know probably better than me, like, what are kind of the differences between, from a regulatory side, I guess, with just like the advertisability, I suppose, of something that's cannabis derived versus hemp derived? Are there big differences there as well between things you could do on the advertising front? Or
yes, I would say, I mean, yes and no, right? You can technically advertise if you're a cannabis business as well. Mm-hmm. You have to take the same pathway. There's a lot of tricks in there. And, you know, we had to reverse engineer internally, like how to, we actually do advertise in Meta. We don't advertise in Massachusetts. That's actually a no, like we don't advertise in Massachusetts. The last thing I want to do is throw a Good Feel seltzer in front of a Massachusetts dispensary owner. And he'll be like, wait a second, you can buy this online now, blah, blah, blah. Like I would get so much hate the cannabis operators. I was like, I don't just blacklist Massachusetts entirely. So even though it's our biggest home base and people are dying to drink our seltzer in our own home state, we can't advertise there because I feel like it'd just be throwing, you know, mud in their faces. So I'm avoiding that at all costs. But on Meta, you just have to take a couple extra steps. There are some dispensaries that are advertising right now. So, you know, on Meta, I know of at least two off the top of my head. There might be a few more. So there are ways to do it, but you have to be super sneaky, right? You have to use the word, you have to use the broccoli emoji, for instance, or like a leaf emoji. And you just have to clean it up your act. And I can go into more detail if you want to, because we're very well versed in it. But like for the most part, it's almost the same. The benefit to hemp is, of course, we're on Shopify. You literally just go click, you go to a landing page, you click and you get to like a, you know, you go into a shopping cart at some point. So for us, it's like very clean. And for the dispensaries who have like shopping carts, you can like add to cart and go pick it up. That's also very clean. So it's almost the same. I just think cannabis dispensaries have been so jaded by the advertising rules in Massachusetts that they're apprehensive of trying it even.
Gotcha. So it's fair enough. So it's kind of just a Massachusetts specific thing. I mean, obviously there are regulations like across the board, across state lines, but that's really interesting. I think you're right. I mean, there's some of the other I've talked to. I think people are just kind of like paralyzed with like advertising and anything like THC related, just because I'm sure it's as hard to understand as anything else when you think about the regulatory things going on with any THC derived product, whether it is hemp or cannabis. So, well, Jason, I just want to say thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate appreciate your time and your knowledge and your insights. I think you brought a lot of clarity to certainly my questions, but I'm sure what other people are probably wondering in their day-to-day lives. I hope it's what I try to bring. So I just want to wish you the best of luck, man, and continued success. I really appreciate you again, and I really look forward to staying in touch. And I come to Massachusetts pretty frequently from New York, actually. So maybe I'll hit you up on LinkedIn, and I'll come by and see if I can grab a can.
There you go. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, Matt, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, man. You too. Thanks, everybody.